Sherry, you made some good points, but I need to move on to the House Minority Leader, Scott Piloff. He may have some answers to this and some other things. Scott Piloff, it's always good to talk to you. Welcome, sir.
Hey, good to be with you, Amos.
I mean, before we talk about the mess at the State Board of Education and beating up on poor little Glenda Ritz, let me ask you, obviously, you're up in Northwest Indiana where there's been that tragedy in the city of Gary where allegedly a Gary police officer was assassinated while sitting in his patrol car the other night. And then we have the situation here in Indianapolis where Officer Wren was murdered, and what we found out yesterday was the gun you allegedly used in the commission of that crime was purchased legally by the mother of the suspect, and the suspect was not a convicted felon, had never been convicted of a felony, which means he had the right to be around that weapon and I think hold the weapon. Obviously, there's going to be a cry from people to bring back some mandatory minimums for the use of any gun. Should we also relook at if you're going to have an AK-47, shouldn't you have a permit for that?
Well, you know, Amos, I got to tell you what, this is a very diverse state, and this is Indiana, and you can see the direction of some of the policies that have happened at the State House. I mean, we just made it easier to actually bring guns on school property. I don't know how we resolve this debate. You've got people in the inner cities that are suffering from these crime waves. You've got police officers getting killed. And you've got people that live out in rural areas, and they think it's their God-given right to do basically anything they want to. We're going to have to look for some common-sense consensus here, because the bottom line is we got to be able to live with each other. We got to be able to live with each other without people getting walking down the street in fear every day of what's going to happen to their personal safety. And you know what? It starts with some very basic things. You know, our friend John Bartlett has been wanting a violent crime study and a murder study here in Indianapolis. Even the whole House agreed to do it, and he keeps getting blocked at every turn. We don't even seem to be able to get the answers on the root cause of some of this violence, let alone trying to do things to make people not want to reach for a gun every time they get a little irritated.
The other thing, should we be concerned that the legislature went 3 to 4 years working on cleaning up and rewriting the criminal code to reduce penalties for not legitimate nonviolent offenses, tighten up the penalties for violent offenses? Obviously, there's going to be a push from lawmakers here in the Indianapolis area to have mandatory minimums for the use of a gun under any in any kind of violent act. It seems like we're going backwards, because one of the reasons to change the criminal law was if we keep putting more people in prison, we're going to bankrupt the state.
Well, that was my first reaction this morning. We saw that Senator Merritt was saying we need to go back to the mandatory minimums. Well, look, I don't think there's anybody anywhere that doesn't agree that if you kill somebody that's trying to protect the rest of us, or you commit a violent crime against innocent people, that you shouldn't be locked away for a long time. But we also have put a lot of judicial discretion back into the system where it belongs, because every case is a little different. And now all of a sudden we did just go through a big criminal reform. And what's the first thing that people want to do, which is...
Wait a minute. We got Scott Piloff.
Are you there?
I'm still there. It must be the NSA breaking in again. Scott, are you still there? I think we've kind of lost him. Let's kind of wait to get him back. Let's take a break, take a bit of a break, and we'll reconnect. And we've reestablished our connection with House Minority Leader Scott Piloff. Welcome back.
Hey, thanks, Amos. I don't know what the issue was, but technology is usually our friend still.
Let me move to this mess that occurred yesterday with the Indiana State Board of Education trying to restrict the duties of a statewide elected official. And as I understand Indiana's constitution and statute, only the legislature can do that for this position or the voters at a general election.
Amos, I have to tell you, this whole situation with Glenda Ritz is just disgusting. She was duly elected. She is an extraordinarily conscientious public servant. She cares. She cares whether kids are learning and getting a quality of opportunity in Indiana's classrooms. And she's just blocked at every turn. And I have to tell you what, this is the most insecure bunch I have ever observed in politics. They are so threatened by this one person, which they take such extraordinary and at times potentially unlawful steps just to keep her from doing her job. If it can't be righted in the courts, if it can't be righted in the legislature, then the voters are going to have to help fix this problem come November.
The other issue that came up yesterday in the State Board of Education meeting, and you may not be fully familiar with it, concerns one of the takeover schools, Arlington High School here in Indianapolis, the takeover operator minority firm called Ed Power that operates a bunch of charter schools called Tinley. And yesterday they basically said, we cannot operate this school with the level of dollars that you were given. And they basically said in public that there had been some guarantees given by the previous educational administration saying that, you know, hey, the dollars would be there. And the state board, and he recommended a solution, which is let me run the academics of the school, let IPS pay the overhead, and let's move forward. And the state board said, oh, you can't do that because IPS is not supposed to have control of the school. This is the same state board of education that created the takeover and authorized it. So on one level, they don't want the superintendent of public instruction doing stuff. They're trying to micromanage her, but on something they had clear authority to do, when Tony Bennett was around, all of a sudden they get cold feet.
You know what?
You gotta watch. You gotta watch the tape. It's a classic.
You know, on a larger sense, Amos, this whole issue of taking over schools and allowing people to make money off of our kids—that's something that is really bothering the voters. And we have to remember, this is what so many of these changes in education policies are about. It's not about making sure kids get an equal chance. It's not about making sure that kids are learning the basics so they have a future in front of them. It's about making sure that the right people have an opportunity to profit off our system of education, one that's funded by the taxpayers and one that is guaranteed in Indiana's Constitution. And the best thing we can do, Amos, I think, is what we're doing right now. We have to shine light on these things, because more and more as people understand what's really being done with the public schools here in Indiana, the more outraged they become. They don't want experiments on our kids. They want the basics. They want their kids to be able to go to a safe school with invigorated teachers who feel supported by the community, and they want to know that their kids are going to learn something and be treated fairly. That shouldn't be too much to ask. It shouldn't be too much to provide.
We're with State Representative Scott Pelove. Now, Representative, when you're in session at the legislature and you're in your office at the State House and you've got the equipment at the State House and the state website and all that kind of stuff, you are not supposed to do any political activity, raise money, call potential contributors, call up folks and say, can you put yard signs out for me in your state office, using the state telephone, using any kind of state resources, the state computer. If not, you're in trouble, and I think that's even a potential criminal offense. Tony Bennett gets accused of that, found the evidence in black and white, clear as day, and this ethics guy, the ethics board did like this. That's a hand slap. $5,000, right, which for Tony Bennett, that's tip money. That's money to go to the steakhouse.
You can take a nice group of people to a nice steakhouse, or you get a used car for that amount.
Your reaction to this?
Come on. And Tony Bennett is off making a very handsome salary as we speak from some of the very people that he helped along the way. Look, that's their guy. And this, frankly, is the problem that you have when you have single-party rule. All across the world, wherever they have single-party rule, there's abuses that happen. and people get sloppy and they get arrogant. And that's why it's so important that the voters restore some internal accountability at the state level. When you've got two adversarial parties that can watch over each other from time to time, even when they're trying to cooperate for the better good of the state, that's what helps us avoid some of these issues.
We've got the other thing is we have this inspector general that's been the inspector general since Governor Daniels was governor. He's getting ready to leave. And to my knowledge, the only top official that ever lost their job over something that the inspector general was asked to investigate was an African-American woman early in Governor Daniels' tenure, Heather Boljak, who was accused of far less of some of these other people that have been accused, including one of your state representative colleagues, Mr. Turner.
Well, look, if you look at the docket of the inspector general's office, you'll see a lot of time spent on things like some poor state employee that forgot to take their ex-wife off their insurance policy. But on big things, you sort of see what the results are. It sort of goes down a rat hole. It's hard to get updates on what's happening. And I have to confess, I made a mistake in my assessment of what the inspector general's office was going to become when it was created early on in the Daniels administration. It looked like the governor wanted his own prosecutor just to go on witch hunts after people. Actually, the opposite has transpired. You can see that when there's some questions about what's happening at the very highest levels of state government, those that hold the reins of power feel very comfortable going to the inspector general's office. And you can see with Tony Bennett, when he started getting hot water down in Florida, when some of the things came to light, what did he want to do right away? He wanted to go right to the IG.
Unemployment is down in the country. Unemployment is down in Indiana. But as you talk to Democrats and others around the state, what are they telling you about the job situation?
Well, we have to think about, first of all, we've been lagging behind what's been a national economic recovery. I always think it's funny, as a supporter of the president, here in Indiana, those that hold the reins of power are very quick to claim credit, but when anything goes bad, they just point the finger right at our president out in Washington. But we've been trailing along behind a national economic recovery, but what's a little troubling is that it's not just about the employment rate, it's about what kind of jobs we're creating. And Indiana, compared to surrounding states, is creating the highest proportion of poverty-level jobs. Meaning these aren't the kinds of jobs you can raise a family or invest in your future with. And we also have to remember that our household incomes, our per capita incomes, the purchasing power of what we earn here in Indiana is not getting us very far. We're falling behind. The purchasing power of the dollars that we earn for our hard work are not buying us as much. They're not stretching us as far. So that's the economic reality that we're not addressing here at this state. The fact is we can do a whole heck of a lot better, and it's not just about the ebb and flow of those unemployment figures.
Finally, Representative Scott Piloff, as you talk with Democratic candidates who are running in Republican districts for state representative, what is their mood? What are they hearing from their voters as they knock on doors and go to the festivals in their districts this summer?
People are upset. I mean, obviously, they're upset about the roadblocks out in Washington, D.C., the inability to build consensus on things that we as Americans have been able to see compromise. But those in Washington can't. They're just interested in making sure that the president's hands are tied whenever they can do it. But the other thing, here at the state level, they're very concerned that you have one party in charge of everything, and they're becoming less and less responsive to the real concerns of real people. And they see a state adrift in social issues and things that divide us instead of focusing on what's going to make people's lives better, and what's going to create a quality of opportunity for everybody. That's what they're hearing, and they're looking for answers.
State Representative Scott Piloff, always good to talk to you. Thanks very much for being with us. Glad to have you.
Anytime, Amos, and I'm sorry for the technical difficulties earlier on. Glad we got back together.
There you go. Appreciate it. 239-1310.